Blog Talk Radio.
Let's get lost in a better place. Pick up the road, travel through time and space. So much to learn, so much to see. A chance to escape reality. Open your mind and your heart. Fresh new start. MJ Network will bring you there. So let's talk about it with Live and on the Air.
Sophia, good morning. Is that you, I hope?
Yes, how are you, friend?
Oh, good. I was just getting worried when you didn't call in. I was like, where is she? How you doing?
You know where I'm sorry, I just finished my book. right this second, and I was like,
I don't even know what country you're calling from. It's not America, I can tell you that.
it's Mexico. I'm in Monterrey.
Oh, that's even
Mexico.
Better. So, let me give a little introduction to this fantastic book that came my way. Megan just sent it, by the way. I didn't know I was getting it, but that's okay. Deceptions, betrayal, desertions,
and I was calling before, but I just got cut off.
I can hear you. So,
okay.
What made you? How did you create the storyline in this novel? How did you write it? What made you decide bees of all things?
Well, I did have this baby that needed to survive, and I found the bees that I needed someone. Something to help him to survive, and I just found the bees, and they just talked to him like made him part of the hive, and gave him through this connection all the abilities that bees have in real life. I don't know.
That's
in
amazing.
A novel, in a human being, they seem like magical. But they just qualities that the bees have in real life. They have this view of the world, connection to nature and the ability to see even beyond the horizon. And so they give them all this, and they just started that protecting him that night. And they didn't want to leave him at all, so I just let him stay with him, and see what came of it. And it turned out that it was like a very central decision, because of course they had to be here, because there would be no life without bees, and especially there would be no oranges without bees. So everything turned out to be like. Of course they have to be here.
They're scary, though, bees. They're scary, I'll tell you. After getting bitten by a couple, let me tell you. But why was this? This was translated. So why did the translator, he flashed back to so many scenes that already happened. So how did he decide to translate this for you, to make it like into a fluent story?
Well, I think the translation was came so natural. I'm lucky to have found Simon Bruni, who's I don't know. He has this gift. He's an artist, and you know what happens to me? I read it in English, and I simply forget if I'm reading in a different language. I just forget it because it comes so natural and it flows in the same lyrics and the same musical quality I do in Spanish. So I don't know, it's just very natural to me to read it in English.
And you're not afraid of them? You're not afraid of them?
Afraid of bees?
Bees, yeah. You're not afraid of the bees? Because most people are.
Oh. Well, I think we should all respect territory, of course. And I actually show it in the novel, right? They are very territorial, mm-hmm. very protective, and we should know that. And I think some Orange Groves people have invited me to watch the flowers or whatever, and
mm-hmm.
take pictures right next to an orange tree full of blooms, and it's beautiful. But you get close to it, to the tree, and it hums. And the
mm-hmm.
bees are, you can hear the murmur of bees. And, okay, I go to it to take the picture, but I know I'm not human of you. And I know I'm just a regular human being that admires them. But I do get scared.
That's interesting.
Because they are very primal. Bees, they are insects, they protect their own, and I admire that. So it's a combination. I love to admire them, and I love to watch them fly around.
Really?
But I know they can be dangerous.
They can be, I know. I know. So there are several characters that I love. First of all, I love Nana Reza. Why did she spend her life doing this? And tell us about Bridget and Francisco. Why did they adopt Simonopio? I mean, that was really, how many people would do that? And how did she come to find this child, Nana? That was so sad, but yet so wonderful.
Yes, well I found Manereja because I needed, okay, so I now had someone to protect the child, help him survive the night, but then I needed someone to hear him, even through such an impossible distance. And Nana Reja, the thing with her is that she's also not actually explained. We find her at this point where she's wondering what she's still doing in the living world, and wondering, she doesn't even remember if she had parents or if she grew out from the land like a pecan tree, and so
mm-hmm.
there's this mystery around her also. But the connection between them, Nana Reza and Simonopio, even if it was years apart, they are
mm-hmm.
both taken in by the same family, even if it's generations apart. Because I want to show, and this goes to answer the question about Francisco and Beatriz, the Morales family, why would they take someone in? And I think there was this time of innocence, maybe. I wanted to show this
mm-hmm.
before a war.
Mm-hmm.
What happens
mm-hmm.
before a war when you live in peace and you, I don't know, pay attention to things that really, really matter, and it's the human
mm-hmm.
connection. And before a war, you have this ability to connect and to trust and to really feel compassion for someone who's so alone or so vulnerable, and you take them in. And the same happens, by the way, with the antagonist. He is also taken in by the same family before the war. And what
mm-hmm.
happens is, after the war, everybody is transformed. And we see this in the Morales family, Francisco, that says, I cannot take anybody else in because he doesn't trust anybody anymore.
Uh-huh.
And you see the transformation in all this, in the story, right? Before the war, after the war, and this is what happens with Nana Reja and Simonopio. Even the bees are taken in. And I don't know that in this world where we become so urban and so, I don't know, so scenic, that we would take bees in, and maybe that's why bees are in so much trouble right now. That
mm-hmm.
in so much trouble that we're going back to that humanity that we can even feel compassion for our insects. And that is happening right now. But I want to show what events and time, the damages events and time can do to us as humans.
I see what you're saying. He could, I'll tell you, no one else could see them, and yet they were there to protect him and his family, which is amazing. But then we come to someone that I didn't like, and that was Anselmo. You always have that, you know, if you don't have a character that's bad, that doesn't, you know, fit in the mold, then it gets boring after a while, and everybody can't be good. So we meet Francisco, who I love, and we meet Anselmo, and he decided he resents him. Why did he want to destroy him and his family? What was his problem?
Well, there's this primal fear sometimes we have when we see others, when we see someone who's different. And then there's superstitions. Mm-hmm. And, we fear what we don't understand. And so at the beginning of the novel, he sees this baby covered in a living blanket of peace and with his imperfection, this clear, very, very clear otherness. And he determines that that baby must be found by the devil or killed by the devil. And that's when he said, "Oh, buddy, you are him. You are the antagonist." I didn't know when I was writing that who would be the antagonist. I knew there was form as a movement would be the antagonist, of course, the landed one. But I haven't determined a human antagonist. Because there should always be an antagonist in a novel. It's just that it's not always a human versus human. It can be human versus government, human versus nature or whatever. And right then and there, I realized I had just found a human antagonist that would also symbolize the antagonism of human versus governance. And it just made everything so much interesting and everything so much, collectively able to connect to that antagonism, right? So much universal. So I just love Anselmo as an antagonist. I mean, someone told me once, I love to hate him. He's a wonderful antagonist. And I also found him to be just such a good antagonist.
He's interesting.
Uh-huh. Interesting, very human. And it was very interesting to me because he also symbolizes this part of the world. Of the war that wanted, that desired, that needed. And I just went into him and tried to understand that part of human nature that is not part of my own, but I understood him. And in understanding him, I love him. Even if I love to hate
him. This is interesting because I got so upset because of the Mexican Revolution, and when the guards came in and they wanted to take Francisco's crop, and then Beatrice had to decide what she wanted to do, that was a very compelling scene. So what did she have? And then Beatrice also has trouble communicating with her daughters. So after they took everything, how did they manage to cope with everything? And why is it that her daughters seem to have a problem with her? And she was really a wonderful person. She just wanted them to do what she was doing, you know, tell them or whatever, and they didn't want to do it. How come?
Well, the thing is that I want to show just a human family, right? There are things that are universal. And the problem with kids are the problem with is the problem with kids, and I think that every parent in the past and in the future can connect with this. The disconnect between parents and kids, and it's like the human curse. We're destined, we're all destined to have. On top of that, they lose the connection because they have to send their daughters away to be safe in a convent school. I mean, in a Catholic school, right? In a convent because of the war. Because it's a real thing that soldiers would march to a town and take all the women. That's part of our history. Mm. And so women had to be protected in many, many different ways. And you hear all these stories. But imagine being separated from your kids when they are just like that age. Mm-hmm.
Then we meet Carmen. And she writes a letter. This was, you know, my mother would love this, too. She would have loved this because she writes a letter to a young man, and they're not happy. And when he finds out, there was a result. If I ever did that, I could see here my mother saying, you're not doing that. We have to choose who you want, and you have to, you know, pass the test. So they find out that Carmen writes a letter to this young man, and how do they react to it, which is, you know, typical.
Well, also like many, many parents do, I mean, growing up to protect a little kid, no? But also, they received this huge amount of letters, accumulated letters that for their daughter. And it also has to do with little town life. And I think that happens everywhere, little town. Mm-hmm. Get to know everything that happens to everybody else. And so at that period, a young lady couldn't be talked about, they would try to be very careful about what was said about their daughter. Mm-hmm. And so such a public romance through letters and everybody finding out, it would be a concern, but also this father who's learning that, this mother who learns that her daughter, with whom she has lost a bit of connection, and then all of a sudden she's not a little girl anymore. She has to cope with that, tries to define herself by that new situation, and goes through this little crisis about old age and everything. But then also the point of view of the father is there is a guy that is in love with my daughter. And I think every father and every mother can also connect with that because we might feel that. Even if we don't have to face we don't care anymore very much about what people say or whatever, we still go... We still feel and remember our little daughters or sons as little kids. And then we have to, change with them because they are changing. And sometimes we wish things didn't change, especially when there's so much war and so much violence and everything. We wish that everything we take for granted stay the same. But no, life evolves, it moves on, and that's what they find out through their daughters also.
Well, this other part that made me very sad. I read up a lot on the influenza of 1918. We've had a couple of influenzas this year too. So a lot of lives were lost, and there's a grave digger, and this poor man had to bury all the bodies and the sick. So how did he prevent his family from getting it? Because everyone else got it, and they didn't. And yet other people did, and it was so sad because everywhere you turned around, everybody was dying. And that is a true fact.
It's that there are things that are invisible to everybody, right? but like a microbe or a virus or the influenza virus in this, we know that. And that thing has to monopoly. And that's the thing. I wish we all had a simonopio in our life. Simonopio has this ability and he feels things. The thing is that I think most of us have a certain amount of instinct or another sense, but we lose a connection to that. But simonopio doesn't. He doesn't lose his connection to nature, to the beast, but also he doesn't lose with the connection with his senses and with his instincts. And so he understands that sometimes he has to act in some way to change some outcome. And in this scene, the family is saved because of Simonopoulos. And he doesn't know, he's a little boy, he doesn't know how to do that. But then he acts also instinctually and lets himself be sick in another sense so that the family stays close to him and not going down. And that way he saves them. And what happens is I did a very historical thing with the family, apart from the beautiful boy being Simonopoulos falling sick, this is something that is historic. Human beings go into quarantine when there's sickness around. A town wouldn't let people in when there was the Black Death. In medieval times, right? They would close their doors and try to survive. And that's what I did with this family. They had this resource of other properties a bit farther away. And so they took care of their family and of their own in a remote location. And that's what they did to survive, much as humans have done to survive all throughout history whenever this type of pandemia arises.
Well, they had to move to La Florida. And what the scene that really got me, because I haven't heard about a single sewing machine in years, my grandfather had one because he was a tailor. So they bring her, Beatrice, the sewing machine, and she hopes that her children would want to, you know, do what she's doing, but they don't. They don't. But the sewing machine meant a lot to her, didn't it? That was a very powerful scene.
Yes, it is. And the thing is that now in modern times, we know that people need more than just food or just some hugs or whatever. We know that people keep things in, and we know that, for example, we know that we need out, right? And, for example, for me, in difficult times, my outlet is reading. I read, and I save my soul, right? I know that, and I know what is happening. I go to a book, and I know I'm going to save my soul or my sanity or whatever, or just a day. But people then didn't know that. They just did it. And what Simonopio did know was that Beatrice needed that outlet. Simonopio knows things more than anybody else. And so he also, without speaking, because he's unable to speak, he makes himself understood. And he manages to have the finger sewing machine follow Beatrice. Even if it's a very, very heavy load, follow Beatrice down to La Florida. And then you see this aspect of Beatrice. She seems to be such a tough woman, such a strong woman. But with her sewing machine, she lets us see her vulnerabilities. And that's what I think happened to us when we found this this comfort, this activity that comforts us, and we go there to go get stronger, but we abandon our the things we try to not show, and we go there when we maybe pray to get some comfort, or we cook like crazy, or we eat ice cream maybe without end, or we read. And so through her sewing machine, we get to know this woman who faces the world, never shies away, but still inside is vulnerable and needs some comfort. And so that's what the senior sewing machine means. Just her comfort and her strength. She gathers her strength while sewing, and it kind of becomes an obsession all throughout her life.
Well, this time period changes. At the beginning of the novel, they have carts, and then they have cars. So that changed. Also, tell us about Nana Paula and her link to the family, because that character I really liked.
Nana Paula, well, this novel, I want to pay homage to extended family. And family, I don't mean people that have a blood connection. Extended family here means people who just connect through different situations. And I want to pay homage. And this novel is dedicated to my nan, Soledad de Tancur, who was my storyteller. She was the storyteller of my life. And she has some dedication at the beginning of the novel, but she also becomes a character in the novel. She's a storyteller that goes around with these shows that Simone Ocho loves. She's a storyteller, Soledad de Tancur. And so I want to pay homage to that family, because these people maybe lose their family, but they make family connections with the family they live with, the family they take care of the kids. And so Nana Paula is this, and Nana Reja too. Nana Reja too. If you come into a family, your family. The same thing that happens to Simon Opio, right? In a different way. But these people that live close to the family become their family. And so Nana Paula decides to stay with them. Nana Paula is, of course, younger than Nana Reja. But the story is the same. Finally, you open your doors to someone, and they live with you throughout their life, and you love them, and they love you back. And that is funny. And so that's what I think about Nana Paula. She's funny.
She is strong. So Francisco and Beatrice, their life is just work. He never has time for anything but work, and she never has any time to enjoy life. Why is that? And when Seminopio disappears, why are they afraid? What is he afraid of, and why does he disappear?
Okay, Francisco, the Morales family, the Morales family, I wanted them to symbolize the northeastern part of Mexico. Because there are many. There is a single story told about Mexico. No country is ever a single story. And so the Morales family symbolizes the northern part of Mexico. And this part of Mexico is very, very well known for being very hardworking and pretty much as what you see of the family. Not perfect, but very, very hardworking. You can't get that children, and I wanted to symbolize this in Francisco. And also, there is this revolution going on, of course, and Francisco is symbolizing the North.
I see.
The character that symbolizes the South. And there is this thing going on in Mexico even today about the
mm-hmm.
South and the North, and this different way, this different view of life, different view of how things should be done. And I wanted also to have this, especially in a time when this revolution is not understood in the Northeast. It's not me saying it, that's a historical
mm-hmm.
fact. And so Francisco is that. He works, and he just says, I love to work. Just let me work. Don't bother me with political things. At the same time, there is no way politics does
mm-hmm.
not intervene with
mm-hmm.
Citizens' lives, right? So it was important for me to show that through him. And this man who has such love for his land, for his heritage,
mm-hmm.
for a vocation for the land. And when also in contrast to what happens next when the war is lost, that
mm-hmm.
these people that chose to be in the land lost their land to people who just wanted the land. And this idea that who does land belong to? And this employee who says, the land belongs to me because I dirty my hands in the land. But then you see the landowner who works
mm-hmm.
very, very hard for the land. So it's trying to put the Northeastern ideals in the picture without canceling the Southern way of thinking also. Okay, they are contrast, but they are both valid, and I wanted to show that. And I couldn't
mm-hmm.
hear the last part of your question. Can you repeat it?
Sinopio disappears. Why does he disappear?
Oh.
And then
okay.
something
uh-huh.
changes. Yeah, why does he disappear? What is he afraid of, and how does he overcome his fears? Because I can understand everybody thinks he's so deformed. They don't realize how special he is and how unique he is and why they definitely want him there.
Well, the thing with Sinopio, starting with his physical self, is that...
Yeah.
We sometimes just go with appearances, right? And
mm-hmm.
that's what happens to the town. To most of the people, they just see a boy who's different, and maybe not all of them hate him,
mm-hmm.
but they just measure him by his appearance and measure him by his... By his appearance and his silence, and just conclude that he must be not intelligent, right?
Mm-hmm.
The family knows different. The family knows Simonopia, and we see Simonopia through the family size, and we see how love conquers all. Love doesn't see any difference. And I love that about Dr. Scott,
mm-hmm.
through the family size. Love Simon's defect. And also Francisco Jr. defends Simon's defect.
No, yeah, I was
going to
bring him up just now.
Yeah, I think he defends him because he says he's my brother. What do you mean he's a monster? Right. And Simonopio, through his connection with the beast, has a purpose in life, as we all do. But the purpose of Simonopio is the beast. The beast stick to Simonopio making part of the, of their side, making their brother and their son and their friends part of the hive, because they need him too, as they need every member of the hive. They need him to make that land that with the sugar cane fields is a desert for them. They need him to change that life, that land for them, because they are the precursors of the citric, fruits, the citric groves in this land. I made them that, actually, when it was politics that changed the crops of this land. There was this president that wanted to, in the land reform, wanted to take land away, but didn't want anybody to take his land away. And so he had some orange trees in his land, and so he wrote a law that said that if you had fruit trees in your land, nobody could take it away. That's real. That's factual. That's historical. And it just makes me so angry to know that, to know that in this country we have those precedents and those laws and those. And so I wanted, as with my power as a creator, as a novelist, I wanted to change that. And so I had the beast through Simonopoly change the order of the events. I wanted to be them to want this life for these lands, and not the other way around. Of course, landowners here in this area change their crops because of the law. And I have here Francisco knowing about the law, but not connecting with the power it would have over him. He just connects with that through the beast and through some flowers Simonopoly brings to him. And that's why Simonopoly disappears. He needs to go and find out what the beast wants from him. He doesn't know. He is a little boy. But he starts going out each time for a bit more, a bit farther away, a bit more time, each time a bit more. And then someday he will realize what the beast wants from him and realize what this would mean for the family and for the region.
Before I forget, because I don't want to forget, Thursday, this is my last show for June, and it's going to be Emily Eternal, and it's W.H. Wheaton, and we're talking about artificial intelligence, artificial consciousness. I take the month of July off, and I'm going back on August 1st when I'm going to interview a meteorologist from Kansas, Brian Busby, and on the 6th, Alan Topol, the Washington operator, and that will be the 8th, and on the 6th, the dead girl in 2A, Carter Wilson, and a whole bunch more in August. We're booked all the way through to the end of December. So if you need an interview, you better ask for it now. So what about Anselmo? Tell us about his wife and how she died, because she comes back into the picture real fast.
Well, yeah. The thing is with Anselmo, he does have a family, and he does care for the family in a way, in a certain way. But he, I think, is upset with his pain and with his rancor, because of his origin. And so he is a migrant, because migration doesn't happen only across the border. Migration happens even within a country. There are refugees moving around during war, even in a country's border. And so that's what happens to Anselmo. He cannot live where he is originally from. He moves his family. He wants land for them. He wants everything for them. The thing is, he doesn't know how to get it, and he doesn't know the work it will take and the sacrifices. And so he gets to the northeast, close to Linares, and finds the Moraes family opens their doors for them. They give them a home or a place to stay. They give them work. But to someone like him, that's some type of subjugation. You're giving me work, give me that. It's like not the same thing, and it doesn't come together. And so he's obsessed more with that and with his desires than with the family. And becomes this selfish, there's still this selfishness around him. And actually also this attitude towards women that shows first with his wife and with his daughters, and then with other women, right? And so when there's this contingency, health contingency with the Spanish influenza, and Francisco tells his people, don't go into town, we're leaving tomorrow towards La Florida to save our lives. But don't go. Well, he eats his cigarettes, right? And he says the wife. And the wife brings the sickness with her. And it doesn't stop there, right? There's this virus, I mean, this world, enemies lying around, and it affects the family. And it becomes another form of resentment for him, the wife. It's not that he misses the wife as a person, it's just that he lost it more. And becomes in this selfishness, in his rancor, in his hate of the other, this just becomes one more thing in the list of things to research.
Well, one thing I found is I love Francisco Jr. I adore him. I think he's great. I like Francisco. He wants his son to work the plantation with him. So that changes a lot of things with Siminopio. So why doesn't he always come on the journey, and yet we know he's always there?
Well, that time they go out together, the two Franciscos, father and son, there's this quality to Siminopio that we haven't talked about, but he loves stories. And he loves spectacles, and he has, first a young boy and then a young man, and he loves that, and he goes through everything he can, he goes at every opportunity, and both events happen at the same time. Francisco has never been away from Francisco Jr., and he's been with Francisco Jr. maybe walking around the land with his father, but at this occasion, there's this conflict he has. The two Franciscos are going away. Francisco Jr. invites him, but he is committed to going to this spectacle in the river bank. And so he decides that it's a time for father and son, and it is time also for him to go enjoy the spectacle. And this becomes a pivotal time in the novel, because Siminopio has his senses and his awareness concentrated in the spectacle, and not in what is going on with Francisco and Junior and Francisco Senior. And so things happen around that event.
The ending was amazing, but before I bring that up, he can't communicate, and yet, this is a novel, you know, people are different and they look different, and all of a sudden you look at somebody that doesn't look like everybody else, and for no reason you get afraid. So there's fears due to someone's appearance, greed, and revenge, and one man wants to take what someone else has given him and doesn't appreciate the fact that he has anything. So how did you create that animosity at the end between Anselmo and Francisco, and what happens is really sad. That was really sad.
But it was inevitable. People still, you know, readers tell me why they write me, and they tell me this is an amazing moment. It is. It was for me, and I very touching and very deep, and I felt it. The thing is that it is actually factual.
Mm-hmm.
It's historical. Landowner side.
Mm-hmm.
And so I couldn't save everybody in the novel. Life doesn't work that way, not even in fiction. And so what I did was actually not show the antagonist, but I wanted the reader to feel the antagonist, and I wanted to feel his feelings and his rancor and his hate.
Mm-hmm.
And so he has these little moments, these little scenes throughout the novel that build up. And I found that this little earworm he has, and he's continually singing this little sonnet, this little part of a song that he still is always connecting, always singing. It's very powerful because it says a lot of what he's trying to do, and of his maybe even his mental illness, I don't know. But he becomes this very, very powerful character. He became that for me as I was writing it. And how did I do that? Well, inspired in historical facts and just building a scene from my imagination. But also that imagination was set by Anselmo's hate and Francisco naivete. He was still very trusting, and he comes to regret that. The family comes to regret that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to show that, and because I wanted also to show, as I was saying before, the before and after the war, and the damage the war does to us. Not only that war killed bodies, it also killed something else. And if you don't protect yourself enough, well, war gets to you, right? And hate gets to you, and it damages you. So I want to show that through that conflict.
Mm-hmm. And you do. I have two very interesting questions, I hope. The final scenes come to play, and we learn the fate of so many. How did you create the final chapters of this novel, letting everyone know that Beatrice and her family would have to find a new way to survive? That was sad. I need a box of tissues for the ending of this one.
The novel started to accelerate its rhythm at the end. It's like at times I felt like I was running like a monopoly throughout the field. And the same thing. I don't want the reader to feel like he or she is watching a movie. I don't want them to feel like that they're just watching away from a certain distance, safely. I want them to go through what I went through as I was writing them. These characters, these scenes. I lived the scenes, and I felt what the characters were feeling. So this is not a safety thing. And this is not even walking in the character's shoes. It's covering ourselves with their skin. and letting our hearts speak with their hearts, with their heartbeat. And so it's a very immersive experience. It was for me, and I find that most readers stay the same. And that's why it's so unique. And we feel what it is, what it is to be, I don't know, lying down on the ground. Or we feel what it feels to be a mother who has lost her son. Not only from a sense of distance, from within the skin, and within the heart, and within the mind. And so I hope that is inviting for everybody. But as humans, of course, we find it very moving. And of course, it will hopefully, leave us appreciating what we have. And fearing hate and trying to find love and trying to move away from hate, maybe. I hope so.
Well, the ending, I have to read this last line, was perfect. Absolutely perfect. I followed the bees, growing more and more agile and quick with the old horizon behind me. We walk without looking back because on this journey, all we care about is our destination. Why did you end it with that? That was so perfect. And what is next for you, and where can we learn more about you and your work? Because I can't wait to read the next one.
Okay, because I wanted it to end with a magical element.
Mm-hmm.
This is a novel that has some magic to it, based on nature. The magic here is based on nature. It's nobody produces anything out of the air, right? It's just magic that I feel lives in nature. And so I wanted to, Francisco, to walk back from real life, urban life, a life of responsibilities and of fields and worries and whatever, and walk back towards this magical element that he knew when he was young, but with which he lost connection. And so that is the ending. And it was actually also very moving to me because he starts with this purpose and this amnesia, and as we progress in the story, he's driving and then walking towards memory. And I find that memory is very important. Without memory, we cannot know who we are and where we are and why we are. And so by the end, he knows everything through Simon Opio's flesh. And he knows why he matters at that point in time. He finally understands that he's been called and called. And so in the magic that comes back at the end, what I try to reveal is where Simon Opio is, where Lana Reja is, and where Francisco is going. And I don't know, it's beautiful. I think it's beautiful to think that Simon Opio, people ask, where is Simon Opio? Where does he? Why did you kill him? Why did he die? And I always say, why did he die? No, the end, we have to remember that it has this magical element. And that Simon Opio and Lana Reja have a magical element around them. They form this magical elemental triangle of life. And when people ask me, but what happened to Simon Opio? Where is he? Well, he's still where he's supposed to be. He's still in nature, and he's still taking care of the sacred life. And so Francisco goes back to them. And I love that. Yeah, I love that. When I reached that ending, I was like, this is it. I found the exact words and the exact tone. Thank you for telling me that you love it too.
The ending was perfect. So what's next for you? What are you writing next?
Well, just before I called you, I finished my next book, right?
Oh, good.
A few seconds before, this is the final paragraph. And it is my first nonfiction book.
Oh, nice.
And so, yeah, it was very exciting, a very different experience, and very difficult to write. I'm very excited to have finished it. But what next, I think, is that you will see Peregrino, my novel that is already published in Spanish. You will see it in English. I hope, I don't know when, but I hope very soon. Maybe 2020 or 2021, I'm not sure, but it's in the works. And I'm very, very excited about that. And I'm starting my next novel in July. So
that's exciting. Yeah, my new book came out last week. I'm excited about that too. I just wrote Silent. I was excited. Yeah, I got picked up by a regular publisher finally, sorta. And I did it independent publishing, and it's called Silent Voices, and it's quite different from what you wrote. It's based on real life events, but the characters tell the story from behind the gravestone. So all of them have passed away. Four of them are based on real-life incidents that happened, and three of them are my imagination. And I was excited.
Okay,
it's the fifth in my Faces Behind the Stone series. It's different. Most people think it's wild, but it is. It's different.
So where can you find it?
You can find yours on Amazon, too, and mine on Amazon, too. It's Silent Voices by Fran Lewis. It's exciting because a lot of people gave me blurbs for it. Some of them are kind of famous. Maybe it's because I review all their books and I go to the Thriller Fest, and it's great. But I want to thank you so much. This is exciting. And when are you going to be working with Megan for your next book, I hope?
Yes. We're doing the same thing. I love this road I'm in, and I don't want to walk away. She's beautiful. And
yes, she's the best. She's the best.
I hope we'll talk again very soon and to read your book. And maybe we can talk again when we meet with Peregrino, my next novel. I don't know the title in English, what the title in English will be, but I hope we meet again.
Well, as soon as they send it, I will read it. Thank you so much for today. I appreciate it. I wish the sun would come out. We've got thunderstorms and rain here in Upper Westchester. I hope Mexico is better because it's not beautiful here. But thank you so much, everybody. Have a great day. And Sophia, thank you, and bye.
Thank you, Fern.